back for another helping of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I'm Ross Boland here with my buddy Barrett Dudley to bring you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs. Barrett.
Yes.
I have the strength of 10 because my heart is pure.
Wow. Wow. The thing is that you don't know is that if your heart wasn't like mine, you'd have the strength of 20. That's the part that they don't tell you.
What the hell was that line? Nobody's ever dropped a more awkward line on a woman in the history of hitting on women. What the fuck was that?
I mean, it worked.
Sort of. She laughed in his face.
She did,
she
but
goes,
then...
She goes...
But then he got the smooches later.
True that.
He got the smooch.
The man was victorious.
You know?
Just couldn't believe he delivered that line.
It had to have been, like, meaningful in some way,
yeah, it's
right?
Intentionally awkward. He's sort of an awkward guy.
Yeah,
this was
yeah.
not the equivalent of in The Witcher when the king yelled, "We're losing!" in the middle of the battle. That was much more... strange.
But
do you think
was it like a reference to something that we're just not getting, or I mean, who's to say? But you're right, it was an awkward line, and you know, may we all have the strength of 10
and our hearts be pure.
Yeah. You know what they say, clear eyes, full cocoa, can't lose.
They also say I'm in love with the cocoa.
Some cultures also do.
It's very different all over the world.
Yeah.
Some places they actually embrace the cocoa.
You can't just go around to all different parts of the world and start talking about cocoa.
No.
Because it's so...
Some places it's called white girl.
It has various meanings.
And some it's Christina Aguilera.
Almost anywhere you go.
Yeah. No. It is known.
Yeah.
Very known.
Also, coconuts.
Mm. Indeed.
See, it just gets more and more confusing.
Wasn't one of them an animated short?
Yeah, the Oscar-winning animated film.
Full-length animated
also
film.
Also named Coco. The deeper you dive down this wormhole,
the more complicated it gets.
You don't want none of this shit, Dewey. You don't want no part of this.
Oh, my God. Today's show, we're obviously going to be talking about The Outsider through episode 4. As well as Curb Your Enthusiasm's 10th season through episode 2, and then a couple of random things.
Can we get sued just for me doing that?
Pretty good. He hasn't done that yet this season. I need a pretty good
no,
in there.
Yeah, he has not.
I need that by next week. I do. Very excited about all the things we're going to be discussing today. Thanks for tuning in. This episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa. I always argue that your mattress is the most important purchase you're going to make for your home, right there with your living room television. If your mattress is shitty, if it's not great, if it's not a Lisa, you need to listen, pay attention. This is how I wake up every morning feeling like I've won the lottery, because my mattress is so damn comfortable. I've been sleeping on a hybrid by Lisa for years and years. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you. And to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All of their products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed, to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you actually want to spend time in. Their most advanced luxury hybrid, the one that I have, is made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support, thoughtfully designed with the best of both worlds. I love it. Barrett loves it. We all love it. They've got great pillows. They got great blankets. They got great everything. Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. And to date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Lisa mattresses are made in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Don't miss out, Clam Fam. Live healthier, live happier by resting deeper. Order today and get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon. Use the promo code dragon. That's LEESA.com/dragon. Promo code dragon.
Dragon.
Patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. In the month of January, first of all, let me explain what Patreon is. It's the place that affords you more OCC. If you've ever thought, my God, I need more, Barrett, more, this isn't enough, and I want it without ads, well, guess what? That exists. Patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. You get additional oysters, clams, and cockles every single week if you want it by joining the Mollusk Militia, or you can join the Crustacean Nation and fall one short. We just recorded our hotline call extravaganza.
Yep.
For the members of the Mollusk Militia today, they have their own private hotline.
We had a lot of calls.
A lot of great calls, discussed a lot of things we've been watching so far this year, and stuff from the end of 2019 as well. Patreon is a fantastic place for you to support this podcast and receive more of it in turn. Again, everything on Patreon is ad-free. What else have we done this month? It's been a fun... Our movie club was 1917. Every month we pick a movie and we go watch it, and then we discuss it in podcast form. 1917 was phenomenal. Barrett and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We also did our throwback movie club, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Thoroughly enjoyed that as well. Again, patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Barrett, you ready to talk The Outsider?
Yes. Let's go outside, as it were. Mm. And as such...
Back to the cocoa.
May it be.
I miss him. I do. I miss Greg. So, Barrett, I watched the episode again.
Okay.
Right before we came in, because I wanted to make sure I had a good understanding of what we have watched so far.
Right.
So let's kind of start with the end of episode 4 of The Outsider on HBO, obviously, with what we find out, which is so far our origin. Our original Coco, or at least ours so far. This is the furthest back we've gone, is this chick that's in prison that never met the little boy she was accused of killing.
Right.
Never seen him before in her life.
Yes.
Same type of situation as the other two people. Jason Bateman, our main character, being the first. What's his last name in the show? Mr.
Maitland.
Mistopheles.
Terry Maitland.
Mistopheles. And and then the other dude that was in prison that slit his throat with his own device. And then now this chick.
Yes.
Now she's still alive.
Yes.
Why?
Well, so I think the big thing with her, as Holly has been kind of retracing the steps, following the chain back to try to figure out kind of where
does this start?
Where it started from. This is the first person that has an idea of what happened to her.
Oh, of interesting.
Of
an understanding or a belief.
Of who has like put this curse on her, or what has, you know, kind of
possessed her.
Yes.
And she gotten her into the situation. Yeah.
She knows despite the fact that she's in prison, she's talking about how this is God's plan.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is what it is. And she knows that the thing that did this to her is not, you can't fight this thing.
This isn't going to be reversed.
Right.
She's not going to get out and get free. She has no hopes or plans at the end, that's what she says. What this thing does cannot be undone.
Right.
And it doesn't stop.
So I think that's what sets her apart, is the fact that she is aware of the situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the what we see in the opening of the episode is the Coco in her form, El Coco, in her form, at breakfast with the
prisoner. Which, by the way, did you notice how it kind of sounded like El Cucu?
El Cucu.
El Cucu.
El Cucu.
I thought I was a little surprised when I saw COCO.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought that they were saying El Cucu.
I'm in love with the Coco.
Yeah.
Not the cuckoo. I have a cuckoo clock in my home.
Cuckoo.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
It's 1 hour off, actually. It's a real pain in my ass, and I can't figure out how to get it back, dude. It kills me. excuse me. So, the beginning of the episode, we see her at the breakfast that we then later see her telling Holly she did not attend.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the El Cucu. They're in her place. We then see him making love to El Coco, and then it scratches him.
Yes.
To which he has no reaction, which I found strange. First of all, like, if somebody scratches the shit out of me during sex,
I was like, it didn't look like a very intense scratch, and then all of a sudden he's like dripping blood.
She had. It's now, like El Coco had a little needle prick to do. Mm, you know, like maybe he's got a little. She's got a little special.
El Cucu has one nail that's just like a little bit sharper than a normal nail.
It's not a coke nail, but it's for this purpose.
Yeah, which is which would also make sense for how the nurse, when El Cucu is in the form of the nurse dude, and he runs into Terry Maitland,
is able to
cut him because he has that one nail that's just like a little sharper than a regular nail.
Now, homie, at the strip club, Terry just straight up like goes to shake his hand and is like, scratch, motherfucker. That's it?
Yeah. But he's not showing any signs of
tripping out yet. And he even looks down at his wrist like.
Which is an interesting thing.
Right?
Because, okay. Well, here's another wrinkle.
Okay. Wrinkle me.
We know that El Cucu possesses these people.
El Cucu.
And takes their form.
Indeed.
So the thing that he's doing with the character Jack, the cop, seems to be a different thing.
Different type of activity.
Yes.
He's got him.
He's like possessed him, like is controlling him through the pain, essentially, through some type of, you know, mind flaying.
Yeah, sort of a mind flaying type of deal, Barry.
If you will.
Very much so.
Shouts to Stranger Things.
Absolutely.
The other people have no, I don't think, they were not aware that they were being possessed.
Like he's
except
like,
except for what the hell is except it? For this original chick who we've now traced back to, who seems to know in hindsight
she's figured out
what
sort
was.
Of what happened
yeah.
to her.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's
so that's an interesting little thing here is that this guy Jack is he's on another mission for El Cucu.
Collecting lamps, deer carcasses that El Coco then goes and eats. It looks like this is El Coco's lair, but his feng shui is fucked. Like he's got nothing good going on in the forest right now. They've got to take all this shit and start to make something nice of it.
Well, what I've always said is that you can tell a lot about a person when you walk into their house and you see their lamps.
Yes, and El Coco knows that.
It's a rule that I live by, and you can just tell.
He's got dude right
how evil this dude is by the lamps.
He's got him running through Restoration Hardware, like grabbing. These are nice lamps.
Yeah, I mean it's you just can tell.
Yeah, every time they show that guy, it's for like 10 seconds, and he's literally so miserable he wants to die, and he's like shopping for El Coco.
Yeah,
yeah, very bizarre. Putting shit into the forest for El Coco. We also have the little. There's many things that come into play in this episode. Let's talk about the old lady that. When Holly is in the prison,
overhears the conversation and has information to share.
She passes her a phone number or an address or something. So she ends up meeting with her and she basically explains to her, look, I heard your girl talking and explaining to you. Mm-hmm. I thought you could use a little more information. I have that information.
Yeah.
Here it is. And now, aside from the fact that I'm like, well, it's just a random crazy lady in prison. You're going to let her lay out this whole case for us. It ends up being she explains all of it. Mm-hmm. She basically lays out the El Coco thing and all this shit and all the different names, the boogeyman, and explains that it's not just that he takes the child. He's the grief eater.
The grief eater.
He feeds on the leftover sadness in the families, which is why we see, the prisoner, the dead prisoner's mother crashes her car into a pole on purpose. His brother dies of an overdose. In the case of the woman that's still in prison, her father and uncle are murdered by the grandfather of the little boy she was accused of killing.
That's right.
Point blank. Everybody's dropping like flies.
The boy that we initially see dead in the woods, his whole family is dead now.
They're all gone.
Mom freaks out, has a heart attack.
Yep.
Boy
goes on shooting spree
and gets killed, and then dad hangs himself.
Dead, all gone. Yeah, which is obviously concerning because our family, the Maitland family, other than Terry, still intact. Correct?
That's a great point. I had not thought about this.
So this is
the grief eater is going after both sides of these families,
and his family is yet to be.
And that is so.
That's what's coming.
I had not put that together. Is that that's what he is? That's got to be what he's going for by talking to the daughter.
Yeah.
Right. By coming for the daughter.
I think so. It's his way in. Mm-hmm. The thing with the daughter, I'm still very tuned in on because I'm waiting to see if that is the in or not, because we get our next time on The Outsider and that it's El Coco, or we're led to believe it's El Coco in the kitchen of the home, and Mrs. Maitland sees it and drops her coffee or whatever.
Well, no, that's Ralph's. It's Ralph's wife that drops the coffee.
Oh shit, you're right.
It's involving itself deeper into this one because it's perhaps because it's being kind of chased and sussed out by our team of investigators.
Maybe so. Maybe these damn kids won't leave well enough alone.
Let's talk broad strokes.
Meddling kids, they are.
Because this episode, while interesting and riveting, and again, I just want to hammer home that like I finish these episodes and I'm like, damn, I wish this was Netflix. Because this is a show where I really, really want to watch
crime shows
the next one.
For that, yeah.
You know, immediately.
Me too.
It's got its hooks in me. I want to know. Having El Cucu all laid out and going through the Google image search of him was, it was good shit, man. And so I definitely, I want to keep watching. But what this episode does is it essentially confirms in greater specificity exactly what we said after episode one. There is a dark evil force who has the power to control people and also be them.
Now, let me give you my take on that. This episode somehow did it for me because I needed the thing. I needed it specifically laid out by an old Cuban woman in her kitchen. That was all I needed this episode to do, Barrett. And now this show has gone from interesting, but it doesn't have its hooks in me, to I'm all the way in because all I needed to do apparently was to be able to Google El Coco.
To have the freaky thing to you.
I need it in my head, put there.
You know?
Yes, that's all I needed. So this was a big step for me.
Okay.
It was.
But here's the second part of this. Because from the get-go, they have not really tried to like hide what was going on
right.
so much as to just kind of give it to you in vague pieces. I have this big sense, also keep in mind that we're, not even halfway through the season yet. There's got to be second twist coming.
And I think that's where I'm suspicious of the little girl situation.
It's Stephen King, right?
Yeah.
Like, they were pretty upfront. They showed us the hooded figure in episode one. We kind of got a pretty solid sense that Terry didn't actually do this in episode one. We had all these pieces. And so now in episode four, we can just put a name to it. So I feel like there's still twist number two coming.
There needs to be, for sure.
Yeah.
There needs to be, because right now we feel like we know everything, right?
Right.
We know how this thing operates.
Yep.
We don't know its origins, perhaps.
Yep.
I doubt we ever will.
I mean, it's the devil, right?
Yeah,
like,
so
basically.
Now, there's other things to play with, too. One of the questions that she asks at the table, the Cuban woman asks her, do you believe in the devil? Mm-hmm. She says, yes. And she's like, one or many? Mm-hmm. And she's like, many. And she's like, good. Because there are many, basically, is what she's telling her.
Yeah.
And then she brings, like, the concept there being that if there is a God and there is good, there must be a devil and there must be evil, is also interesting because, okay, well, we've introduced the devil. We've got ourselves a demonic situation here with really bad shit being sowed all over this damn town.
Yep.
Is there a force of good that is going to combat that in a supernatural sense? I don't know. Like, it makes me want, if there's a bad version of El Coco, this faceless entity that's going around eating children, essentially, and then feeding on the grief that's left behind as its source of fuel. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is there something else? I don't know. And that's another potential place for a twist. I had not gone to the step of Googling El Coco until you specifically just mentioned it.
Yep.
I enjoyed watching Holly Google it plenty. Well, now I've done it, and damn it. This is terrifying.
Yeah, Well,
fuck all this shit.
Now, next, Google Black Anise, the other one, and you will see Demon Witch Lady, who potentially worse. Not
Black,
sure.
What?
Anise, A-N-N-I-S.
A-N-N-I-S. Yeah. Okay. Oh, no.
Yeah, because she's going to do some stuff for you as well.
Who's she?
She's one of the other cultural names for
Googles?
The boogeyman.
Okay.
Yeah. So she gives us some of those names. Black Anise, El Coco.
One of them's Russian.
The Russian name, which basically translates to boogeyman.
Yeah.
By the way,
Baba something.
Is there any connectivity between El Cuckoo and all this kind of folkloric, boogeyman type stuff and the movie El Babadook or The Babadook?
Gotta be. Absolutely. Also, Pan's Labyrinth. Gotta be. In fact, on the El Coco page, you see that's an El Coco. That's a version of it.
Okay.
It's down there eating children's.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, what does the Babadook do now? Also eats the kids?
It utilizes grief, depression, and sadness to, yes. And it's in a similar sort of way. I can't say the Babadook thing because it'll ruin the Babadook for everybody.
All right.
But if you haven't seen the Babadook, it's one of the best scary movies I've ever seen in terms of creativity and execution.
Yeah.
Also fucked me up for like 48 hours. So if you're like depressed, maybe hold off on that one until you're seeing a bright sunny day and then ruin it with the Babadook and then follow that with Human Centipede 2.
Ah, yeah.
Don't watch the first one. Just skip to the second one.
Because
it's good, Barrett.
Because it's hilarious?
No, don't ever watch that movie for any reason. Ever, ever, ever.
Human Centipede 2, they just create a longer centipede? Is that what happens?
It's like a less humane centipede. The first one, it's a surgeon, a doctor, and the second one is just a fucking guy.
Oh, a copycat.
Just some guy, though. Like, if you did it or I did it, instead of a surgeon, you know.
Yeah.
So it's messier.
Yeah.
Another wrinkle in this particular episode, the young boy that left the van in the parking lot, comes back to the police and says, hey, oh, I lied. I saw the dude who got in the van. And look, he scared the shit out of me, so I didn't come tell y'all. And they're like, well, what did you say? And he's like, he didn't have to say anything. And they show the scene.
Mm-hmm.
That thing, first of all, he's wearing an outfit from Yeezy season 4, staring at that kid. and is the scariest fucking shit in the world.
Yeah.
If I ever see someone that looks even remotely close to that, I'm out. Austin, I'm gone. I'm moving. Second that it happens. So the kid tells him, look, I saw a person take the van. I'm going to draw him for you. He's like, maybe you can draw him. And I'm sitting there thinking, what is this kid going to fucking Van Gogh? How's he going to draw that?
Mm-hmm.
Kid crushes the drawing. Greatest face drawer in the history of children. But then our guy, Terry, or our cop, not Terry, sorry. What the hell is a cop's first name?
Ralph.
Ralph. He sort of shows it around the room.
Mm-hmm.
What did you make of him showing it around the room?
Well, the face is all like disfigured and
right. It's
weird.
It looks
looking.
Like the face of that thing that we keep
kinda,
seeing. Yeah,
yeah. He
does a pretty decent job of showing. Look,
yeah,
it's a disfigured weird.
It's a
face.
Disfigured weird face. And so I think he's just like,
this isn't helpful. Is that what he's saying?
No,
fucked here.
I think he's saying. I think he's more kind of like insinuating, none of this makes sense. And this follows suit that this guy doesn't even, the dude that this kid just drew doesn't look like a dude. This is more otherworldly like, shit that okay. We're not going to be able to explain.
So it's almost a, you've got to be shitting me. Because
yes.
He nonchalant without looking at the people, he like holds it so they can see it this way, turns it so they can see it that way, like places it this way and then like puts it down. He's
think,
just like so discouraged.
I think from Ralph's point of view, he knows that something's up and is hoping for like an explainable set of circumstances that tie together in a neat bow to explain what the hell is going on. And the further and further that he, you know, pulls on this thread, the more he's realizing that this is some next level.
This is not good.
Some next level shit.
And what does he tell Holly in episode one or two?
He's I have no time for
tolerance
the unexplainable.
For the unexplainable.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you're going to fucking hate me.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he's starting to accept that there is an unexplainable
here. I think he's going to have to.
Yeah, right.
Certainly.
And you see him running the tape back over and over and over and over in the strip club to see the scratch.
That's
not something that a man who doesn't believe
something
supernatural could be happening would even be doing.
That's true. Yeah.
Because as someone else in this episode says, like, murder is not a virus. It's not a sickness that spreads.
Now, there's no word, though, from the other piece that we're kind of like, that's left unsaid is what the rest of the team, what's their reaction to everything? Because we know Holly is like ready to hear some cuckoo shit.
Yes.
About
She's loving it.
And Ralph is knee deep in the investigation. Hell, he might be waist deep at this point. Know what I'm saying? And, but what's lawyer man and private investigator think? They still have nothing to say about it.
Lawyers just fighting people in bars on the behalf of, or in restaurants on the behalf of the Maitland family. Not sure what the hell is that. That's not what you want in legal representation.
Or is it?
I don't know, maybe. The town is very upset with the Maitlands still.
Yeah.
And okay, so that was another situation I kind of want to play with. In the restaurant, when people start attacking her, it had the feel of a malevolent presence sort of turning in the restaurant, like as if
I'm
saying? So I think it extends beyond feeding on the grief and the depression and the sadness of the child. I think it's also just like straight up poisoning the town with anger and shit.
No, now that you say that, I did kind of get that sense. It's like, because
it's an overly aggressive attack from that guy.
Yeah,
like you're like, whoa, dude, she didn't do it.
And there is something. Now, they do a really good job of creating this because the restaurant feels very intimate and small, and there's like a lot of people in a small space.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can feel the energy in that room, like kind of.
It's tense, yeah, from the get-go.
Yeah. And, you know, I that's definitely possible. It's also possible that they're just saying, like, this is a small town in Georgia, so everybody is at the same damn restaurant on Friday night. And like
a reminder that they know each other too.
Yes,
everybody knows everybody's name. Small
and
town.
They're pissed about what happened, and they're not like
they haven't forgotten.
They're not cool with Terry Maitland's wife.
Yeah,
you know,
could be something deeper. Could be as simple as that.
Yep.
And that's sort of the fun of this show at this point. And you brought up Babadook, Barrett. It's the only other horror show or horror television or piece of movie, film, whatever that I've ever watched where it played with the concept of sort of, it's almost mental health. Like, Babadook does it in a very different way, but you could almost, like, argue, like, the description of El Coco, you could say that's depression. You could say that's, you know what I'm saying? Because the way the old woman describes it, that it eats on the grief of the family after the child is gone, well, that's like a very real thing that people who lose sure. people combat. And it can literally kill you. I mean, it can take everything from you if you allow it to, if you don't fight it. So there are definitely interesting parallels between El Coco and elements of real non-supernatural life that we live every day. It just gives it another layer. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing about this show that I've dug so far. Now, I had not, to your credit, drawn that parallel, really. So
yeah, no, but you're totally right. And I did get that sense, or it's something that at least crossed my mind, is that at the end of all of this, right, like El Cuckoo is like a personification of
horrible
what,
shit
of what happens when horrible shit happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
like is it potentially what like triggers a person to make some terrible decision
right.
or do something horrific, but then another movie that kind of plays with some of this though is Insidious.
Oh yeah,
because it's all like
a little bit
you know, it's an internal
right.
thing, right?
Yeah.
So
no, it's
but
weird.
But El Cuckoo is very insidious. It's a thing that like the fear. And the pain and all that, it like feeds on itself and
the pain
gets worse and worse.
The pain part in particular, in this case. So what do you have any clue as to the situation in the forest? Because they've shown us enough. Okay, we see him. I mean, they're giving us bit by bit. Mm-hmm. We see him go hunting. He shoots the deer, loads the deer up in the truck. We see him go to, Restoration Hardware. Mm-hmm. He buys up all the lamps and a bunch of other shit as well. It's like mm-hmm. a couple lamps.
Yeah.
A couple desk lamps.
Like a Target.
One tall lamp. It's not a Restoration Hardware. they're pandas. They're not pandas. They should pay us, but it's a one tall lamp, a couple small lamps, but like a bunch of other random stuff too. And
then when we see
the woods, he's made a couple trips.
Mm-hmm.
There's just shit stacked everywhere.
No idea what that's about.
And then when we see the deer carcass again, it's very clearly been scraped and eaten away at in the way that we saw the boy at the first episode was.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, all right, if El Coco is getting this, he's clearly controlling this guy and getting him to do all this stuff. No, yeah, like, is it a layer situation? Maybe that's the thing we've already sort of brought up, I guess. This is why I want to binge it so bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's killing me to not have any clue what he's doing in the forest with all that stuff.
Right. And even though this episode kind of puts a name on the face, if you will, it certainly is leaving many bows untied, right? Like,
and that, dude, you brought up Stranger Things earlier. It deserves a lot of credit for some of the things that The Outsider has utilized multiple Stranger Things sort of stylistic storytelling stuff through, which Stranger Things didn't necessarily invent the things that it did, but The Outsider has reminded me of it more than once. The mind flare thing is very much like, you know, the rash in the back of this dude's neck is like almost straight out of the show. There are just a couple elements that have reminded me of Stranger Things and the way they've executed it so that it's creepy and weird and like there's all these elements and things that are happening that you have no clue what they're attached to yet. They've just sort of laid it out in a similar way.
Yeah.
Any other stuff on The Outsiders fourth, third, second, or first episode?
I think that's it. We had Holly again with her man friend kind of helping. They have a little romantic chemistry, if you will.
Got a little hot something going there. That's very bad news for one of them, probably.
Glory Maitland trying to find a nanny/homeschooler. And it's just people coming in, trying to get the story and become famous, essentially.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of users.
Yeah, sycophants, man.
And anybody else that
I don't think so.
Anybody else doing anything out there?
What's with Terry Maitland's dad?
Oh yeah, yes. Thank you.
Why is he turning up the TV to 100?
No idea. And I do not understand what he was saying to Holly. He seems to be speaking nonsense, and then he's saying something
that does make sense.
It does make sense, but then he like goes back to the TV and turns up the TV real loud. This episode was very horror-centric. We've started this kind of conversation about, is this thriller, is it horror?
This one was more
this
horror.
This one was way, like, leaned hard into the horror.
Absolutely. Though. Especially, I mean, okay, so I took it as like, I thought he was turning up the TV and then he was going to tell her something, because that's often what people do in situations where they think they're being listened to or bugged. They turn up the TV or the radio as loud as they can so that the thing that's listening can't hear. So I thought maybe he's turning it up so El Coco can't hear. But then they cut away and we never find out. They would never go back. It's like, wait, what? And the other time we see him, Grandpa Maitland is sitting in the hallway,
mm-hmm.
and one of the cops or somebody, there's too much Grandpa Maitland for him to be nothing. Something is going to happen with him. He has to know something or something. Because how did he plug Holly into the right, like, how did he matter enough to show me all that? It was just not enough for me to make sense of him. I don't know. That's the place that I still have questions.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it, though. So her kids are out of school, and she needs them homeschooled because they were being bullied at school. That was the reason for finding the
homeschoolers.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because and if they move to another school, it's just going to be the same
thing over again. So the lady recommends homeschooling. Now she can't even find a homeschooler because all the homeschoolers end up being writers or journalists. So you can see it's starting to tear away at the Maitland family already.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time. So that's fucking terrifying. Oh my God. And now I've got Babadook images in my head and I don't want to watch another. All right, moving on. Let's talk about something happy and fun, shall we?
Yes.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, episode 2
mm-hmm.
of season 10, which will just forever be the one with the painting of what's her name? Susie?
There was a painting of Susie.
Mm-hmm. That'll always be this episode to me.
Yeah, it was. So this episode, I thought, was a serious step down from episode 1.
As well as for me. Yeah, I think that's fair, though.
And
I think
easy highlight was the entire Susie painting storyline, which is not a surprise because, as we talked about after episode 1, like, everything between Larry and Susie is kind of like, I mean, it might as well just be like the engine of the show because it is the most outrageous, laugh out loud.
It's the best
stuff.
Conflict, yeah.
Low-key props to the wardrobe department because everything that they put Susie in is just like, it makes so much sense and it is so outlandish and crazy. But the glittered like femme top, it's lovely. It's just quite a creation that they have there with Jeff and Susie. The painting was hysterical. And
she's been like that. To their credit, even further.
Oh, yeah,
every season, bro.
Totally. That's what I'm saying. It's like they keep finding.
Yes.
I laughed out loud when she shows up on the screen in the femme top
and then goes
outside and screams at the
gardener.
At the contractor, basically.
Yeah.
You know, like, how funny was that?
Oh my God. Yeah. It was unreal. The side sitting thing was fucking stupid. It was a perfect example of one of like the forced ones.
Bits, right?
Cause like, yes, Barrett, it is awkward when you side sit with someone at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Was it necessary for a fourth of this episode? No. Would it tie together at a fair?
Maybe this is like an LA thing, but it struck me right after the episode. I was thinking about restaurants that I go to in Austin.
Right.
And there's almost no opportunity to do an awkward side sit.
See, I'm thinking now in my head of restaurants in LA I've been to, and I feel like it is an LA thing because they pack too many damn tables into everywhere.
Yeah, like I was thinking, I was trying to think of restaurants comparatively or to compare in New York because Larry's a New York guy too, even though he lives in LA.
Right.
And yes, it is more because the restaurants are tighter and smaller, there's more opportunity to like have that.
One
like
awkward
somebody
sides.
In a banquette and you kind of like move to the side of this tiny little bistro table.
Yeah.
But in Texas, I feel like it's rare.
It is more rare. And it certainly isn't something that we see as like intimate enough to be grounds for anyone being alerted. And that's the elements of Curb where the jokes don't hit all the way. Now, that being said, it's still funnier than most things on TV, even when it doesn't hit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you know, if the reaction of another character is not realistic, then they've spun up an unrealistic conflict that's not going to be as funny. So like Ted Danson reacting to the side sitting thing was not realistic. Therefore, I didn't care about that conflict.
The piece of that storyline that I did like, and Curb has done this a lot, is when obviously we know Los Angeles is a huge city.
Yeah. Oh yeah, real big.
But when they condense it and they make like Larry's little kind of circle of friends and community feel very tightly knit and like small. So the fact that he's got the same mailman as his friends, basically, and that's one of the ways that they all get information about each other is from Lionel, the mailman.
Yeah.
Like that's always funny to me is when just to like basically just the picture of that, of Ted Danson and Larry David having the same mailman in L.A.
Right.
Like, that's pretty funny concept.
Yes.
But the side sit was...
Didn't do it for me. The bathroom with the lawyer. Has this not been two episodes of Curb and three different Seinfelds already?
So the private bathroom ripped straight from Seinfeld. The side sit also very Seinfeldian. And the whole thing with Larry on the couch with awkwardly kind of next to a girlfriend.
Yes.
Also very Jerry from Seinfeld.
But
this episode borrowed a lot from Seinfeld, I felt.
But when you can notice something like that scene being very Jerry, that I'm cool with, because Larry wrote and Jerry wrote Seinfeld, so
yes,
it makes sense.
Course.
But when it's a direct, literally, I can go, wait a minute, wasn't there an episode of Seinfeld entirely about using a bathroom
pretty
like
much,
this?
Yeah.
An executive bathroom type of situation? Or another episode of Curve? Why do I have the phrase executive bathroom? It means this has been done too many times already. That was a little, I could have, I don't know. I didn't. It still made me laugh. It was a huge step down from episode one. But, in its defense, there was never going to be a season of any television show ever that maintained that pacing and masterful amount of comedy in 20, 30 minutes of television, or 40 minutes, whatever the first episode was.
Well, the earlier seasons of Curb do.
Not every episode, dude.
Dude.
Maybe the first couple few.
They are feeders, all
of them. Maybe
the
first couple few. But when we get deeper, it's very hard to maintain that height.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are going to be, especially episode two, I would have expected to be a step down for sure. I still like where we're at in terms of what our setup is. Like, he's basically at war with everyone now.
So what did you think of, also, by the way, shouts to Terry Polo. She's a certified member of the Clam Fam.
Oh, cool.
Definitely listens.
Right on.
And I liked her as Larry's, new flame.
Of course. Yeah. Why? She's a great listener.
Big shouts to Terry Polo.
Huge shouts.
What is she? I recognize her, obviously, from a lot of stuff. I think mainly is Meet the Fockers, right? Isn't she Ben Stiller's? Yeah.
Yes.
Producer Mike is nodding. Yes.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terry Polo.
But she was in some other stuff. Maybe a Star Trek or two.
Pam Burns.
No, that's Jerry Ryan.
Burns Fokker.
Yeah.
In the Meet the Parents trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, tell me.
She was great.
How did you feel about that bit in the scene?
It wasn't original enough to be that long. I mean, look, that again, watching Larry do anything is funny to me. But that was not an original concept or a joke that hasn't been done 40,000 times in the past several years.
Very sad that this episode aired on the day of Kobe's death, which still is just absolutely surreal to me, and I'm still struggling to process and wrap my head around that. But throwback to the Chappelle Show sketch.
Thank you.
With the NDA, which leads to the Kobe.
The condom toss.
Toss into the
waste bin.
But that was the bit, like, I think it's been done maybe even before the Chappelle Show episode, but that's the one in my mind that sticks out. And it's 16 years old now.
And
so,
this was an adaptation of that.
Yeah.
With the phone added.
Yeah.
And then it didn't even go, like, she shuts him down.
Yeah.
So he's like, end of session, and that's
also,
it.
So tell me this. This starts, and like, he puts the phone out, and I'm kind of chuckling. It's funny. Was he going to record their entire sexual encounter?
Yes.
Okay.
That was the concept.
All right.
That's another piece of what made it so funny.
So if they
as
had
long
sex,
as she kept saying yes,
that he was just going to record, he was
and then
just
continue
make
to,
sex tape.
As they had sex, he would continue to ask, like, "Can we switch to this position?" and confirming it with the camera. Yes, it would have ended as a sex tape. So, like, almost the irony.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's pretty funny. That's funny.
It was funny, but the basis for it is so, it was just so not fresh. That it felt a little, it was like, okay, I get we're readdressing
you,
it in light of the Me Too movement, but.
Are you getting, give me like a percentage funny and a percentage creepy where Larry David is like, and then I'm going to take my left hand over here, place it on your thigh, and use a crab-like motion. I'm like laughing, but also like, damn, Larry, I don't need all this.
I was. I was laughing my ass off. I think it's 95% funny, 5% okay, creepy to me, because he's executing it so well. Like, that's part of the humor too, is that
he's a creepy old man, like, at this point.
And then, yeah, if you had to execute things this way, it would be insanely creepy give detailed descriptions of the things you would like permission to do.
Yep.
A crab-like motion. Dude.
That's a great point.
I would love to... Okay, this show, it's no secret that they do a lot of shit on the fly. And people obviously crack and they have to do scenes again. I need to know how many takes it took.
The outtakes from all that.
How did she not crack at all? Because he's about to crack the entire time that he's delivering that shit.
Yeah.
And she somehow sticks through it and makes it through and delivers her lines. And I was fucking crying. You know what? Never mind. Fuck it. I don't care that scene's been done a million times. It was hilarious.
I'm ready for more Latte Larrys. I'm very much looking forward to the Petty Spite, the Spite coffee shop.
What the hell? Yeah. The Spite shop? I thought that was going to be open by this week.
Yeah.
He's still got work going on.
He's still still building it out. That's fair.
They're still putting it together.
Contracting, you know, just always hits a snag, right? Always takes longer than they say it's going to.
It always does, Barrett. It always does. Shall we move on to the random stuff we're watching away from Curb?
Yeah, definitely.
So basically, yeah, we thought the episode was a step down. It's still fun, yada, yada.
Oh, and also, let's just add, because we addressed it, because we had a call about it on our Patreon podcast.
Sure.
But we can just say that we do realize that we overgeneralized last week.
Oh, absolutely.
If it sounded like we implied that anybody that's a political conservative wasn't watching Curb, we understand that there are a lot of people all over the political spectrum, including on the right, maybe even the far right, are watching and enjoying Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Republicans buy sneakers too.
That's right.
Right.
Okay. So onto the random stuff. Yes.
There was one piece that came up on the Patreon episode today. That was surprising to me, but it's a show that has come up here and there. It gets tweeted at us here and there. Mm-hmm. It's one that has garnered a lot of respect.
Yes.
It's The Good Place.
The Good Place.
That you've secretly been watching. You've been having an affair with this show without telling me.
Yeah. So I was through, let's see. Let me just double check here. Okay. So I was through.
You Googleize it.
Two seasons of The Good Place.
Okay.
And just recently, or late last year, maybe, season 3 was added to Netflix. So seasons 1 through 3 of The Good Place, all available on Netflix. So earlier this year, kind of blasted through season 3.
Okay.
What's great about these seasons, and what's great about The Good Place, among many things, is that although it is a network comedy, there are only 12 episodes in a given season.
Mm.
So it's not like Modern Family or Seinfeld or How I Met Your Mother, where there's like 22 to 24 episodes.
Old school.
In a season.
Hell on Earth, yeah.
It's also very, very serialized. So you need to be watching in order.
Okay.
And this show would not be, like, once it's all said and done, you could probably just throw on a random episode of The Good Place. But there's not a lot that's like, out of context, still makes a bunch of sense.
Okay.
So it's very much like a storytelling arc here through every season. So it's something that is definitely, you know, you really need to take as one whole piece.
You start at the beginning.
Yeah. So that's another thing which kind of separates it from its kind of counterparts in stuff like 30 Rock or The Office or...
Where you could kind of pick up anywhere.
Parks and Rec, where you can just kind of like throw on any episode.
Absolutely.
And it all makes sense.
Sure, you'll miss some jokes, but yeah. you're going to get most of it, yeah.
Speaking of, it was created by Michael Schur, who is an American television producer, writer, and actor, well-known for his work on The Office and Parks and Rec, the latter of which he co-created with The Office producer Greg Daniels.
He's so, talented, this
talented
guy.
Talented dude, brilliant mind, stars Kristen Bell among a very, very, very talented ensemble cast.
I've been in love with her since Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And I am now almost caught up on season 4, which is available to stream on NBC.com or, you know, on the NBC app via whatever device you're using.
What's it called? The Peacock?
Not that yet.
Oh.
Just straight up the NBC app because Peacock doesn't exist yet.
Oh. That's really what it's going to be called?
Peacock. Yeah. quick bone to pick.
Okay.
It is absurd that on the NBC app, which I find through the Apple TV, that you have to have a cable login to watch things, and then they show you just as many commercials as you would see watching it on regular TV. Does that not seem counterintuitive? If you're going to have it on your app and play the ads, don't your advertisers want more eyeballs, which they would get if not everybody needed a cable login? It's also on NBC. Like, this is a free network. All you need is a pair of bunny ears to tune the network.
Yeah, but I think
I'm not getting this hang up here. Why
do you have to
anybody
log in?
Yeah, with a cable login. Why do they need that piece of it?
They want your information, where you are, your IP, your fucking cookies and shit.
Don't they want clicks and views and people to see the ads on their on these shows, which are free over network television?
There are also examples like this. It's the old head network executives that are like failing to put together a version of their product that makes sense because they still don't fully understand the streaming world. So that's going to be something that goes away in the next 10 years, hopefully. Yeah.
Anyways, let me just tell you a little bit about the show and why it's so good.
Yeah, I just read the synopsis and I had no clue that was this concept.
It is a very, very original concept, and it explores people like essentially living in the afterlife. And that is just a sector that has not been explored much in comedy. And so there are just like everything about the show feels very new and very fresh. And throughout season three, like I would finish an episode and I would basically just look over at Laura and I'd be like, this show is so good. This show is so funny. It's so well-crafted and well-written and everybody nails their part. And it's very much like you have these four people plus Ted Danson plus another kind of main character who's not really a human. And it's just like, it's just TV magic in a very digestible 21-minute episode, serialized format.
Can I read the synopsis?
Yeah, go for it.
When Eleanor Shellstrop finds herself in the afterlife, she's both relieved and surprised that she's made it into the good place. But it doesn't take long for Eleanor to realize she's there by mistake. She hides in plain sight from the good place's architect, Michael, and his all-knowing assistant, Janet. Her seemingly perfect neighbors, Tahani and Jason, and open-hearted soulmate, Chitty, help her realize that it's never too late to change. With the help of her friends and a few enemies, Eleanor becomes determined to shed her old way of life in hopes of discovering a new one in the afterlife.
Yeah. And there are a couple twists.
Clubs.
Relatively big twists in that first season.
Cool.
The character...
Is she dead? Is she not dead?
No.
I get a feeling that's a yes. Yeah.
There's a character named Jason, who is the... He's a dumbass from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hell yeah.
And throughout all four seasons, there are running jokes made at the expense of Blake Bortles.
Really?
And it's just like one of these things that works so well and is so funny every time they do it because he is obsessed with Blake Bortles, thinks he's the best quarterback ever. And it's just...
Bortles like out of a job now.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's
which
great.
They also end up playing with in season four.
Okay, that's phenomenal.
This show comes to its series finale, I believe, tomorrow night.
And like, that's it, it's over.
And that's it, it's over.
So I can't watch this. It's not going to be something that commits me to a 15-year commitment.
Absolutely not. You could knock it all out in a couple weekends, probably.
Acha!
Yeah.
You want to hear about what I've been watching?
Let's hear about what you've been watching.
So I'm in You Season 2 now. And as I told you on our Patreon, it's the same exact thing as Season 1, except it's Season 2. You see, he's found another chick to stalk, and he's just going to murder everyone in her life, and see how much havoc he can wreak until he needs to go change names again, I guess, and we'll do season 3 at that.
Because what he does is he thinks, I've watched 2 episodes so far of season 1.
Okay.
But you can kind of help me along here.
I shall.
But he thinks that he's manipulating these people
for the right reasons
into being exactly what he wants them to be so that he can be who he wants to be for them. And then every time he does something that he thinks is going to work, it doesn't really work.
Right.
And so he has to...
Fix it
and change something a little bit, which frequently leads to the... imprisoned... Damn it. I can't remember.
Federal prison? Lockdown? Solitary?
He imprisons these people against their will.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
he holds them hostage.
Potentially kills them.
In a cage. Yeah. Situation. Yeah. It's fun as hell. Chris D'Elia's fun. I like Chris D'Elia as a comic.
I think I was right there.
So I wanted to watch this show to see, basically that was the thing that finally brought me in. I was sick of seeing people tweet about it and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris D'Elia was in season two. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to give it a swing. And I've enjoyed it. It's just really funny that season two, which is the one that everybody's told me. So like, oh my God, it gets so much better. Well, season one was good. I liked it a lot. And then for them to just run it back is classic. It's just classic any type of entertainment, but I was just surprised because people were bragging on it so much to me. Anyway, I enjoyed it still. The other thing I started, dude, is the Netflix Aaron Hernandez documentary.
Oh, so I watched the first episode of that.
Oh my God. Like, we all knew this thing was really bad,
mm-hmm.
and that his life was a mess, but there was a point there in the story of this all breaking where I think we were like, you know what? We're good. We don't all need to know all the horrific shit that led to this incredibly fucked up situation. And I kind of stopped tuning in. Like, I didn't know how far back his troubled... I didn't know his childhood was the way it was. I didn't know any of this shit. Like... It is just an insanely, I'm on two or three, and it's crazy how much, it's a great documentary. Very well done. How much detail they go into with this dude's life is nuts.
It was pretty surprising to me that none of the stuff that they start kind of like revealing to you made it very far into mainstream news.
That's what I'm saying.
The fact that
a
high school teammate of his is straight up like, we were in a relationship.
Yep.
That's a bombshell, dude.
That's about the point where all of us tuned out. I'm serious. Everybody was like, we've heard enough about Aaron Hernandez. And that's when like it started to come out. Look, this dude was gay his whole life, or at the very least bisexual. There was this relationship that was apparently since he was a child. I mean, it is incredibly complicated. This whole thing is wild. If you love the NFL and football enough to be interested in that story.
Yeah.
And then you sort of forgot about it forever, like I did.
Yeah.
The documentary is wild.
It is.
So far.
I mean, if you are, you know, if you watch the NFL, if you're a sports fan, that definitely adds this a major layer of interest to the Aaron Hernandez story. Obviously,
absolutely.
But at the same time, it's one of these. It's also like a point of fascination, and I compare it to the YNW Melly case because. It's really, really difficult, and I don't know if they get to this in episode two or three, but do they ever like begin to talk about like motive in the Odin Lloyd killing?
Oh yeah.
Like what possesses somebody like either one of these guys to murder in execution style a friend?
You have your
There are many, many crimes. Don't fuck with cats. Like, how does somebody put a kitten in a vacuum or whatever he does and, like...
I don't even know.
...fucking torture an animal? Like, there's many, many things that we don't understand. But in these two specific cases, it's just really crazy to think about...
Well, so that's the whole...
...murdering a good friend in cold blood.
So that's what the documentary, I think, tries to get at, though, is, like, when you look at the guy's life as a whole, you start to see more how you would have become so twisted up and fucked that you would make a decision like that.
Mm.
In the YNW Melly case, which is a rapper, for those of you who are unaware, he's still like completely adamant that he didn't have anything to do with any of this shit and seems to believe he's going to be free any day. And every other rapper you see speak to it says the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just utterly confused about that situation.
He definitely did it, and I think he's going to go to jail.
Damn, fuck.
If you just like, you can dive into Reddit and like read about the details of the case.
Oh, I read the details.
And it's like,
it's pretty cut and dry.
Pretty open and shut. Yeah. I don't
mean,
know how.
They murdered these dudes and drove around with their bodies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's like smiling ear to ear, like dropping bars on the phone, putting out another album.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
He does
and
not
his shit,
seem...
goes, shit goes right at the top of the chart. Our fascination with rappers that are super fucked up people is pretty weird.
Yeah, it's a lot of them. It's a lot. Like, there's like nine of them right now that are like woman beating psychopathic murderers, and we're like, give us another hit.
Yeah,
Tekashi,
you
rat bastard.
Can we rewind real quick to you, because I have a question.
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
So
we'll do it for you.
I believe that the the female love interest in season two. Her name is Love. Is that right?
Very on the nose, yeah. Indeed.
And she's played by Victoria Pedretti, who we know from Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, that's where she's from.
And then in season one, our love interest was Guinevere Beck, a.k.a. Beck.
Yes.
Played by Elizabeth Lail, who I was not familiar with, but who I found appealing and endearing.
I found her physically appealing. As a character, I wanted her to go away.
So my question for you is this. Who would you rather stalk, Love or Beck?
Oh, Victoria Pedretti. It's not close. No, season two took a big step up in the female casting side. I think they have a chick from Euphoria as well in here.
I thought Beck was great. I've seen two episodes.
Okay, that's why. Because she is great for a little bit.
But I just mean from an acting perspective as well. Like, I thought her...
I did too. Beginning of the season. For sure. Absolutely. First handful of episodes, I thought she was a good character. I was like all into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sort of derailed.
Oh, like, okay.
It's, yeah, it just, you'll have to trust. I don't know if you're ever going to go finish it, but
I mean, they get married. I'll probably make my way through it.
The like, finale
the,
is
the
there.
The dude kills a guy with a latte, you know, with anybody that knows me knows that I have zero sympathy. I know I'm going to get tweeted about this, but I have zero sympathy for those with peanut allergies.
Ah.
And I plan when I do eventually someday have a kid, hopefully when that happens, you know, someday. I'm just bringing peanut butter right into the delivery room.
Okay.
I just might smear my baby with it. Just to be like, you are... This is happening. Peanuts are happening. I'm like totally on the Louis C.K. side here.
This is insane.
Yeah.
This is an insane
thing. Can we edit that, but that one part out? Mike, I don't want to agree with Louis C.K. about anything.
Yeah. You can't agree with Louis on anything anymore. All he had to do was go masturbate on a few women, and now we can't even make Louis jokes. Unbelievable.
But no, but I mean, all jokes aside, like, the guy, he had a peanut allergy, and it led to his end. So, you know, maybe you guys shouldn't have peanut allergies.
Look, peanut allergy people, I'm going to be on your side here. You were born this way. It's not your fault. Barrett's belief system is twisted and backwards and archaic. Peanut people, God bless you all. No, the second season so far, though, has been...
The peanut allergy epidemic has got to be tied to the anti-vaxxers. That's who I'm going to blame here.
Dude, we only get in hot takes like this at the very end of episodes, and I feel like some people are already gone and they have no idea what we do.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mrs. Fletcher some more.
If you missed Barrett's...
Let's dive into my psychoses.
Mrs. Fletcher rant, like, I don't know, what was that, a month and a half ago? Holy shit. It was one of the funniest things that ever happened on this show.
No, I'm sorry, peanut allergy people. I feel bad for you. I'm a selfish person.
Are you that big of a peanut guy, though?
Oh, dude, peanut... I could not live without peanut butter.
I didn't really know this about
you. Huge peanut butter fan.
I love it, too. I just didn't know you were so deep in the peanut allergy fight against people.
It just stems from, like, a selfish...
Love for peanuts.
Prickish... like intolerance for an allergy that I consider very stupid because it affects something I love dearly.
Yeah.
And also, it's pretty stupid. Did this happen?
Because it's in the air, right? Isn't that the thing? Like, you can't take peanuts on buses or airplanes anymore?
No, that's why they don't serve peanuts on a plane anymore.
Because people, the allergy's too sensitive.
Yeah.
People have it too sensitively.
Yes.
If they even smell a peanut, fucking lungs shut down or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I got lucky with allergies, okay? I have all of the seasonal allergies. I'm sneezing, coughing, can't breathe, can't see, can't smell anything all year long. And I've gotten used to it. That's my life. It's cool. Don't feel bad for me. I have no food allergies, and I would lose my mind if I did. Yeah. I feel very blessed. I'm sorry for you people who do have food allergies. Just keep in mind, horrible teeth, can't see a goddamn thing, got my teeth fixed. No calf definition whatsoever. So it's like, you got to take what you get and leave what you don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well. Yeah. I know, totally.
How did
everybody gets everything.
How did we get to anti-vaxxing in there? I just don't know. You never know with this fucking show. Last week we said Republicans don't watch television. All right, let's get the hell out of here. That will do it.
Russ, this is, look, we we have had extra time to watch a few shows here and there that we're not talking about on the pod. Sure. Right now, we have only 1 hour long drama that we are covering with regularity. That opens up the podcast to more flaming hot takes.
That's good stuff from
your beloveds here.
That's good stuff.
And that's it. I think that's a fun show.
I couldn't agree more.
We just did a deep dive on The Outsider, which was great.
And then we got to get weird.
I'm in love with the cuckoo.
The cuckoo.
And now we get to, you know, piss off everybody that loves anybody or has a peanut allergy themselves. And like, what more could you want from a podcast?
To be entertained and explained and mansplained, and then at the end, we insult all your belief systems and your political beliefs, and we tell you to come back next week. No,
thank you dearly to everybody that is still listening.
Yes,
to all of you at this point, to the podcast.
I'm not kidding, especially to the Republicans who actually reached out to us and were like,
"Yeah, absolutely."
Hey, I'm a Republican and I watch all these shows, Dick. That was, first of all, there are going to be times where Barrett and I discuss things and we let them be natural, because I believe that leads to better discussion later, both online and on social media and on this show. And this was a good example of that, where it was like a conversation that we had that while we were having it, I was like, I'm sure you too were thinking, oh, this is going to be interesting. And then after the fact, it's like, obviously, look, I made the joke earlier in the show, Republicans buy sneakers too. You and I discussed it at length on Patreon. It's essentially this is the take. It seems you're probably less likely to enjoy Larry David and Curb in general, and just he's very liberal.
Yep.
If you're a MAGA hat wearing person. Now, that being said, we got into it, and it's obviously one of the suggestions was perhaps Larry David and Curb predate this current situation we find ourselves
The divide wasn't so insane between
Republicans and Democrats when Curb started airing 15 right. years ago or whatever. And I feel like
20 years ago
or however. Is it really?
Yeah, I think season one was 2001, maybe even 2000.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yes. That's why I told you this is like he's way before even Obama.
Holy shit. It was the year 2000.
Yeah.
Okay, that's 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it definitely predates the divide that we have now. And for that reason, I think there might be even more Republicans watching it than normal.
Sure.
But all in all, no, that was an offensive and weird take, and we're going to have those on occasion. We say shit. This show is more unfiltered than most for a reason. We like it that way. It's supposed to be that way. And for the people that we lose along the way as a result, you're too sensitive. For those of you that are still here, we love you. Thank you for supporting the show. And every once in a while, putting up with Barrett or I saying something that is just so asinine and ridiculous, you can't even believe it. And especially to the people who have been here since year one, when I incorrectly named every single person on Game of Thrones for like 150 straight days. We love y'all. Thanks for allowing us the opportunity to grow.
Absolutely.
As we do the show.
Thank you all. Thank you for listening. Thank you for not turning us off when we go on, you know, crazy derailments and say silly things. Thank you for giving us feedback when we, you know, when we say those things and you
means
say,
a
hey,
lot.
That's not totally right because this and this and like, because here's my point and it makes a lot of sense. So just
all the messages were incredibly constructive that I saw.
They were. Not one person was like, hey, fuck you.
Which in all honesty just further speaks to like how wrong we were about it, which is I thought that was a great moment. We all took something away from it, didn't we? That will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show in this case today.
Lisa.com/Dragon?
I can't whisper and do.
If you like us really going off the rails, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where we just let it all hang out.
Yeah, and twitch.tv/bossroland, where you're literally watching live. And even if we said something outrageous that we wanted to edit out, it'd be too late.
It'd be too late.
You'd already have seen it and heard it. Rascals, what's up? Follow us on social media for the best in TV and movie content you can find on the whole of the internet. Instagram at Oysters Clams Cockles, Twitter at Clams and Cockles, Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. Again, Patreon.com/OystersClamsCockles is where you get more OCC ad-free every month. Movie Club, Throwback Movie Club, Hotline Call Extravaganzas. It's a beautiful place for more OCC. Support the show and get yourself some ad-free pods and vids on there. What else? Follow me, Ross Bolin. At WR Bolin on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WRBOLEN. You can also hear my voice on the Ross Bolin podcast weekly, which is available wherever OCC is available. Also brought to you by Bolin Media. It's a humor comedy, but also lifestyle, mental health, addiction, substance abuse, animals, pirates, ninjas, current events, and more podcasts. Lots of fun, as well as Freeze All Motor Functions, where we will be covering exclusively Westworld Season 3 in the, March? Is that March?
That is
in the coming weeks.
That's March. That's March.
Wow.
I was telling people on Twitter, we can frame this up later, but I do believe that there will still be Westworld talk this show.
Just general.
We just won't do
deep dives.
It'll be more broader.
Yeah, for those of you who never listened to Freeze All Motor Functions, essentially the way it works is
and
Jared Borislow.
And if you want like the companion podcast for Westworld, Freeze
that's
All
where
Motor
it
Functions.
Is. Jared Borislow, my co-host, runs that show and breaks down the episodes in incredible detail so that I can understand what's happening. That's basically the show. I ask questions, Jared explains what's happening, and that's the entire show. It's very similar to this show. It's very, very detailed and very much a deep dive on a level that neither Barrett or I will be going. Fortunately, I will be able to pull from Jared's wisdom use it here as if it was mine, which I'm very much looking forward to that element. In fact, it's the only reason we were ever doing it. I just didn't tell Jared that. Barrett, where can we follow you and also listen to more of your voice?
Oh, you can follow me at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and Twitter.
Twitter.
And let's see. Also listen to Club Cool. Phil and I will be back in the lab recording tomorrow. And then the week after that, if you're a ski boy or a ski girl, I'm having the Circling Back friends on to talk skiing.
Oh, wow.
And just overall mountain aesthetic. If that's your
mountain style.
If that's your bag. And yeah, go out. Man, I know you people like to seek out vids on the internet. Mm. Who doesn't seek vids on the internet? So
I'm a vid seeker.
Yeah, go watch our vids.
Watch our vids. Watch our vids. I have the strength of 10 because my heart is pure.
Yeah, love to hear it.
What a weird quote to drop. Until our next helping, adios, muchachos.